All right, he gave me the thumbs up, so I guess we can get started now. Thanks for coming to the last session of the day. Always good to see who sticks around and who's going to go. Since we've got a small audience, we can hopefully be a little interactive with it. So we're going to just kind of do kind of an overview of Office 365, talk a lot about some of the small business, and look at a couple quick scenarios that have really resonated with some of our small business customers. And also just want to take a poll, like how many of you are partners today that are planning to be administering or helping small businesses get onto Office 365? Almost everyone. And so I assume the rest of you are actually small businesses hoping to use it or just looking to get some more Office 365 overviews? Yes? Okay. So yeah, we can talk a little bit about if you have specific questions about that as well. We can take a look at some of the partner aspects as well of administering the service. Oh, and I'm Andy O'Donnell. I'm a product manager on the Office 365 team. In particular, I focus on service updates and on our administration. So we'll take a look at some of the small business challenges, do a quick overview of what Office 365 is, talk a little bit about the different plans, because even though someone's a small business, they might still have some of the needs and requirements of some of our more advanced enterprise offerings. And since all of those enterprise SKUs can also be purchased for small seat sizes, that is always an option for customers, and we'll talk through that. Take a look at just some scenarios and we'll spend most of the presentation hopefully just going through some demos of end user functionality, things that are important, and think about how those resonate with SMBs when they're some of the challenges that they're facing. And then spend a little time looking at some of the admin portal as well, although I'll be mixing that in throughout the demos, so we might not need to cover off that and just spend some time on your questions. So some of the challenges that we heard from SMBs when we were doing a lot of the research into the most recent set of updates, hopefully most of you played around with the updates that we released back in end of February, early March. And so these were some of the things we were hearing from customers as we were beginning to rev that version that we released, particularly around some of the challenges that they have around setting up and maintaining their own servers, which is just very very difficult for a small practice. Even if they have a partner, a lot of the overhead and burden of maintaining those is too difficult. They wanted to make sure that they could look professional. It was always a concern. And there's even some new features that we've put out there to help, again, so small businesses maintain that sort of professional look like they're bigger than they are using the capabilities of Office 365. Another aspect that's obviously very appealing are all of the different places in which we enable them to get things done. So just having good web access, good ability to access their documents everywhere. And we'll talk a little bit about Office on Demand and how that can also help customers get access from wherever they might be working, and some of the mobile apps as well. And then just again, how critical their technology is for running that small business. They don't really have a backup plan, and so when it goes down, their servers reboot, they're out of commission, unable to do anything, and so it's important for them to have all of that aspect of the service as well. So we wanted to make sure that we had the technology that could meet all of these needs, low IT overhead requirement for the individuals. Again, when you compare the admin UI for the SMB offering, it's quite a bit simpler than compared to, say, the midsize or the enterprise SKUs. So obviously, it's designed so that someone could administer it without really the need of a lot of extra help, or just, again, it's designed to help them get started right away and using the service, and then they can go deeper into it. Into the admin portals if they need it. Also, because we do cap the seat size, we're able to provide SMBs a slightly lower price point that's very appealing, so that they can get the Office suite and all of the rich applications that they know and all of the services at that lower price point. And so I'll talk a little bit more about the different SKUs too. So hopefully most of you are pretty familiar with what is in Office 365. It's really now with the latest release, it's the cloud services of running Exchange, SharePoint, and Link, on behalf of the customer in our data centers, and then, of course, the rich Office client itself that you can get and have streamed down now with the new click-to-run technology, so that users get a fully cached version of Office. And that's an area that a lot of SMBs that I've talked with have struggled to grasp, is that it's not just a browser web apps, but that also they get the full offline client, so that, you know, if they're working from an airplane or they lose internet connectivity, they're still able to do a lot of their work. And I think that's very important in your conversations with them, very important thing for them to understand that it includes the full rich client Office. And recently, there was the addition of the Office Mobile for iPhone, which is also part of, if you have a subscription that includes Office 365 Pro Plus, or so the rich client, also enables you to activate on mobile devices as well. Again, already mentioned the servers, services. Another area of investment in particular with this recent update was around the mobile and web experiences and making those more versatile for different screen sizes. And I'll just show you some examples of that when we take a look at what's some of the new features and capabilities inside of OWA. Obviously, the availability, kind of already hit on, this is just very kind of a basic thing for them, but just, again, always a good point to land with your SMB customers, how the availability works, what that means for them, and how that really compares to what, you know, when they were running it themselves, how much time and energy that can save them, not having to worry about that aspect of it, as well as things like patching, et cetera. The continuous innovation, another aspect, of course, is because it's a service and not a packaged software, that means you'll get updates included there's no future like, oh, you have to buy the next version when it comes out. It just, as updates come out, those will be either streamed down to the rich client or have the backend upgraded. And then, of course, we have the SLA, or we have the certifications for third parties, particularly here for your EU customers. We have the EU model clauses with the data processing agreement, which everyone can sign. And then there's a lot of backings into how we operationalize it. If you're interested in certifications, recommend going to the Office 365 Trust Center, where you can get a full list of all of the certifications that are available at this time. So it's a good website to be familiar with. All right, so this is a kind of a streamlined version of our offerings. There are obviously a lot more offerings in the enterprise, but I didn't want to fill those up since we were focusing more on the SMB audience and comparing the versions that really have the Office applications. So the main one that, you know, is most interesting for small businesses is really the new small business premium SKU. This was new at the end of February, early March, and that's the one that includes both Office plus all of the server workloads in a single package or single subscription. A small business can mix if they choose to go with small business premium, and they have some users that don't need the rich client. They can add small business without the Office client at the basically a little less than half the price. Obviously, we have different pricing for different countries. So you'll just want to go on the website and look that up and see what the local price is in your country. And then mid-size business. Oh, and the main difference there obviously is the seat cap. So it's designed, small business and small business premium are really designed for 1 to 10 people organizations. But there's a hard cap at 25. So if you have more than 25 users, you really have to start with the mid-size business offering, and that goes up to we recommend up to about 250. It has a hard limit at 300. So again, if you have more than 300 users, you're absolutely looking at the enterprise SKUs, but you probably were already anyways. Then there are, of course, some examples of times where small businesses might want some of the mid-size or enterprise SKUs. Common examples are, I've seen when talking with small law firms, they really like the idea of the e-discovery and some of the rights management protection offerings that we have available in the enterprise SKU. The other thing to think about when helping a customer, when you're walking a customer through this decision of which SKU do they want to be on, is really if you think that they're going to have the want to add on a lot of additional capabilities later, some of the small business SKU, you can't easily add on other ones without essentially creating a new tenant and then moving everything over into midsize or an enterprise tenant. And so you want to make sure that if you know that they're going to grow very rapidly, or if you know that they are going to want to use things like rights management protection, you should start them off with an enterprise SKU so that you don't run into that issue later on. So again, definitely think of the small business as very basic. It's really targeted at essentially almost sole individuals even who are just looking for their own personal setup. But if you're working with a customer that needs more, you definitely want to consider using the other SKUs at all. Any questions about just kind of the high level overview and how to think about that with your small business customers? No? Okay. So as I mentioned, one of the great investments was being able to use your devices, and I'll show some screenshots of that. But again, we now have Office Mobile on Windows Phone, on iPhone. We have web apps across all of your modern browsers on tablets, phones, and desktop. And we have obviously the updated experiences for OWA and SharePoint as well. So one common scenario that we've talked with some small business customers around that's been interesting is really around scheduling. So particularly in healthcare providers, you often have a centrally managed front desk, if you will, or admin setup where they're taking all of the day-to-day incoming requests from patients or from doctors, and they're then scheduling those out in their system. But a lot of times this is done very manually. In particular, the point that the SMBs are running into problems is breaking down when changes are happening, the day of or the upcoming day, and they need to go and update the books, and they have to find and notify everyone, especially as the different offices have multiple locations. And so there's some good ways that Office 365 can help meet that. We'll take a look at sort of how that can be done with shared calendaring. All right, so jumping over into our Office 365 tenant here, we've got ourselves set up as Katie in this particular example. And we're going to go ahead and take a look at what we can do with the shared calendar. So when you're inside OWA, you're able to see your personal mailbox. You can go to your personal calendar, and in this case, we've actually got Katie has already been shared with a particular calendar, so she's able to view that and make changes to it. And then I'll show what it looks like from the central admin capability as well. I'm just going to go ahead and refresh my Outlook app. So going to the calendar view here, you can see that we have the base calendar, and then we also have the patient appointments. And so this is the shared calendar that everyone in the organization has access to. And of course, you can the user can choose whether or not they want to see that information. And then they can also, depending on how you set it up, they could just have read-only rights, or you could make it so they can go ahead and edit it if, for example, something comes up and they know they won't be able to make an appointment or meet it. They could change that here live as well. Another nice thing is that this has been optimized. I've seen some small businesses use this on a touch screen, or use it because we've optimized the web apps for the touch, or you can use Outlook Rich Client. So it makes it very easy for people to just move these appointments around and communicate those changes very, very seamlessly. So this is what it looks like from an end user laying it on top of their personal calendar. But then the other aspect of this is, of course, the central shared mailbox itself. So if we go up to the top and choose Open Another Mailbox, we can go ahead and open the patient appointments mailbox and open that. And so then this is, in this case, we're not really using the mailbox a lot, but you could obviously have a common mailbox that maybe several people in the front of the practice were using to triage email from from patients in this example. But the main one obviously is the calendar. So here, as the front line, the admin, the front desk person, as they're making changes to these appointments, that will obviously get reflected across for all of the healthcare providers. So this is a good example of being able to have the central administration, being able to move and update those, and make sure that everyone on the team is staying in sync as to the changing needs of the business. So the shared calendars and shared mailboxes are very useful from that standpoint. And if we look at how you can create those, I'll show you first. This is the homepage of the Administration Center for the small business SKU. So if you go to users and groups, you can add contacts, groups, and shared mailboxes. So in this case, this is where we would go ahead and add a new shared mailbox. You give it a name, email, and then, of course, choose the email address, and it'll go ahead and set that up for you. And I'm not going to create one right this second. But you get the idea. It's very straightforward, simple. Again, compared to the M&E experience, it's much simpler just to set that up quickly, but I can show you what that looks like from an E standpoint. So if I go, this is the experience you'd have for E&M. And so you go again to your recipients in the Exchange Admin Center and shared, and this is where you can actually add, change, and modify all of the settings again. And you have a lot of the same settings that you would expect if it was essentially a user, and you can get the more advanced ones here and set up things like automatic replies if it's an unmonitored alias, et cetera. Yes, question.
Until the recent update, we were on the e-plans. You have a shared mailbox, you have to do it with PowerShell. Is that available on the e-subscription now as well? Creating shared ones with a program?
Yes, so the question was, you used to have to do shared mailboxes in PowerShell. Yes, that's why we had to create the easier UI to do it, because it was not intuitive for small business customers. But this is also, yes, this is the E&M experience as well now. So you can do that. You don't have to use PowerShell anymore. Better, yes. Better late than never, right? So while we're here in kind of taking a look at mailboxes and OWA, kind of an interesting thing to take a look at is if we, I talked about some of the what we've done to optimize some of our mobile experiences. So for this same OWA account, I'm going to show you sort of the experience if we were on sort of a tablet experience. So I'm refreshing here using the tablet. So now you can see this is that same inbox that we were just in the traditional OWA experience. But now we've made a larger, essentially larger target. So you can see sort of the buttons on the side. You can imagine on a touch device, it'd be very easy if you're holding your hand, hit these with your thumbs. You can easily reply to messages that you have. And it, of course, it does kind of a nice little overlay on top here, sort of in line. You can choose, to save, not save. Another aspect is that if you do create things, obviously that we make sure that they carry across all of the different screens. So if we go ahead and we're going to go ahead and we'll just go ahead and save to our drafts. And it lets us know that we have the draft there. But if we go and take a look at the same mailbox in the phone view, so here you can see how, again, it knows we have more real estate. But if I go ahead and shrink this down to a more phone view, you can see that same inbox and how we've optimized it if you have just a more vertical experience here. So again, and then you can swipe between, red, unread. Notice the draft that I had just created in the other view still again appears here, and we've optimized things like the calendar for the different views as well. So that you can see here it goes into a day view. If you were in the tablet experience, it would go right to the week view. So that's just a sample of some of those optimizations. And then in Outlook itself, This is the new Outlook 2013 client. Similar to what we did in OWA, notice when you roll over the different mail messages, we provide what's called just-in-time information, so you can do things like quickly delete or flag, but those don't appear all the time. So we're trying to make the UI look less busy and then provide the information right as the user wants to take action about the particular message as well. So that's, again, just little enhancements. Another example of just-in-time information are the quick peeks. So if people hover over the calendar, people, task panes down at the bottom, they're able to get an interactive view and quickly look and see and actually interact with upcoming things in their calendar without having to actually switch out of the context of where they are, of how they're actually working. So just, again, more enhancements to make it a little easier for people to triage their email. The one other aspect of the Outlook experience, in particular, that can be useful for small businesses, is the ability to have some of the new app model. So hopefully, some of you, as you think about getting SMBs on Office 365, will take advantage of developing some of the apps using the new app model. So this is an example here where these are Outlook apps that have been integrated into both they work in Outlook or in OWA, and they detect the text and essentially here is seeing that there is a meeting and it's trying to create the invite. I've seen some other interesting small business ones, such as things for doing massive label printing, document signing, and other scenarios like that where you need to interact with another system and bring that information in. And I can also imagine very specific use cases where for healthcare, you can imagine this might tie into another system that the small business would have with patient information. So as they receive emails from that patient, it could pull up their record automatically for the healthcare provider, and they could always have context of the conversation, where they are, what was the situation, they were trying to, that patient's history charts, et cetera. And you could do all kinds of interesting things. So as you think about supporting SMB customers, this is definitely a tool you'd want to take advantage of. Okay, so then next scenario is multiple office locations, branches. So this is very common, with small businesses that are growing rapidly. They end up having a couple locations, maybe a couple towns apart, or even very far apart, and they need to stay in sync and also know what the other people are working on. But it becomes a lot harder than it used to be when they were all just in a single location. In place. And often, this is one we definitely, in our research, heard a lot from it was mostly a concern of the owner. The other scenario was the locations might be more project-based locations. So with, say, contractors who are, building, they have a lot of people maybe on-site or at a couple different sites helping with different construction or, other type of projects like that. And they want to be able to have a good way to get visibility into what is being worked on where, what people are tracking in terms of the tasks. And without having to deal with a lot of the overhead of setting up, it's difficult to set up, meetings during the week where everyone can come to that central location and the time that takes away from revenue generating activities. Because often, with SMBs more so than, larger customers, that they're very, very sensitive to the time they're not spent actually doing activities that are getting the project done or working with a customer to generate revenue. So there's really two things in Office 365 Small Business that can really help customers in this sense. One is some of the new enhancements we've done to integrate the projects and project timelines into SharePoint. And the second is just using Link. Link is definitely doesn't have the name recognition with small business customers. It's not heavily known, but it is absolutely great product. When I've demoed it with many small business customers, they just light up and think of all the scenarios that before were very challenging for them and what they can do now with the capabilities of Link. So we'll just take a look at some of those, some of these options here. So jumping back over to our demo tenant. Here you can see we've got, now we're using some of the SharePoint Online capabilities. And if we go over to our persona here, we can see, for example, under under the newsfeed area, we're able to see all of the tasks that have been assigned to Katie. Some of these tasks are ones that she's assigned herself that are private. These are the ones if you were to use the tasks in OWA or Outlook, for example. But then other tasks have been added basically from different sites that she's a part of and working on. And so you can imagine here where you could have, you know, in the example of the multiple locations with the contractor, you know, these could be two separate locations that maybe that are being, you know, the project is being worked on, and what are the things still left to do for the customer at each of those sites, and how can someone get visibility into that? So this helps, you know, Katie know which ones that she's responsible for, but then the aggregate view of the team site itself. Here we have a team site that's been customized, and we have an aggregate view that the business owner, or the manager of this project is able to see all of the different tasks that are being worked on across the team. And so they can add or of course manage and edit these lists, so they can go in and see the complete details, who everything is assigned to, when they're saying they're going to do it, obviously if people have completed it, and add additional information and items as well. So if they go ahead and then they can actually customize even more options related to those individual tasks. So it provides both the ability to get a quick aggregate view of what's being worked on, and then also to disperse the work among the team and easily manage that. And it's just a built-in feature in SharePoint Online. And all they have to do to add it is when you set up a SharePoint site, you know, again in the recent update. All sites start with the new Get Started pane, so it makes it easier to do some of the common tasks that are necessary, such as adding, this is how the working on a deadline, this is how you can add the project management that I just showed, but things like sharing the site, so quickly getting everyone using and having access to it without having to do multiple steps, they can just easily add people. So that's, again, another enhancement there. The other aspect that we were talking about was, you know, how can they use Link, really, or how do SMBs want to use Link? So here I've got Link signed in as one user into the Rich client, and then also I've got a separate user here inside of Firefox. And notice I switch a lot between different browsers because I have multiple individuals open on different accounts to simulate a kind of a team. But also shows you some of our cross browser support because we use open standards HTML5, JavaScript, CSS, so that we have, again, full support across all of the different browsers. If we go into, for example, here we've got this team meeting. And now you can set up meetings right from within OWA. It used to be you could only set up meetings inside with the Rich client, but now you can do it online. And we can click Join from the browser, and it's going to try and connect my desktop one, but actually I'm not going to connect that. I want to use the Link web app. So this is, imagine if you had a computer where you didn't have the Link installed or it hadn't been previously installed, you can actually use the web app and have a fairly sophisticated experience where you're able to do things like share the desktop. You can obviously do IM. You can have audio, and it can even do video too. So all from the, again, this is, you can see there, it's doing a little projection, all from the web app. And so the web app works on both Mac and PC and in all of the major supported browsers. So again, offers a good option there. And so if I go ahead and join it from the Rich client here, if I go to Outlook, so that's actually Sarah that's in the meeting through the web app, and then I can go ahead and join from the Rich client. If it lets me, I can see that it has the meeting. My meeting invite isn't showing up that way. I'll just do it through OWA. So if I go into OWA, go back to my calendar, I can easily open up the same invite here. Either that or I didn't send the update out to everyone, which might be the case. But you get the idea of how I can easily add the different users to it. Let's see, if I go to the meeting here and take a look at Sarah, I can also, one of the nice things is I can also invite people, and you can usually add people that are inside your organization, or you can add people that are outside. So I can actually go ahead and join the link meeting. So if I want to, say, copy this URL, and then I could send it via IM, I could send it via email. And then they'll go ahead and kick off the invite, so I can actually join it from the rich client as well. So I'm going to go ahead and use Link for everything, although you can also set up other phones if you wanted to, say, call your mobile phone because you know you're going to be away. And I'm auto-muted. And then, of course, I can do things like share my desktop, and we'll create a nice little infinite desktop sharing loop where it's going to go ahead and it'll share it both with Sarah and then go ahead and close this. And so there we have inside the web app, it's actually loading the desktop view, inside. And so there we can see we're creating the nice little infinite loop because we're sharing inside of a sharing screen. But you get the idea of how we're able to easily join and collaborate together through these meetings. So this one, again, with SMB customers, definitely some technology they haven't had before. The desktop sharing I find is very popular too because you can give control. And so I've seen cases where partners have used that to do a very basic troubleshooting without having to have additional third-party tools and having to manage those tools and install them. So that saves a lot of time. All right, so we'll switch back over to the presentation. So the last scenario I wanted to talk about was outsourcing or contract work. This really is another one where, again, because small business customers tend to be very, very lean, not have a lot of extra employees, sometimes they have tasks they want to get others to work on. And one customer I was working with, they did a lot of recording of their notes to digital tapes, and they would actually send those tapes to a contractor via mail to get those processed because it had sensitive information. They would then type that information up and then put it onto a USB and then mail it back. So you can imagine they didn't want to send it over email again because of the sensitive content. So you can imagine that whole process would take a week to get these notes back that had been that were being recorded on tape. And so using things like the external sharing capabilities inside SharePoint, you can invite other users to work and collaborate on documents. Again, staying secure, they have to say if you want to force log in with credentials, that's all possible. And I'll show you what that looks like from an admin standpoint as well. But again, it gives SMBs another option to collaborate easily with people outside the organization. So we'll take a look at that. So going back to our users here, I'm going to go ahead and close out of this meeting. And we'll go ahead and take a look, go ahead and close out of this one as well. So we've got Sarah's SkyDrive here, and Sarah wants to go ahead and share this with someone external to her organization to help work. So in this case, she's going to invite someone outside, but require sign-in still, and you can choose whether or not that's necessary. So we're going to go ahead and invite this other user that we have logged in, who's external to the organization. So if we go here, we can see we've got another. This is someone using just a Outlook.com account. This is really from Katie. So this is, you can see here, this is the address where it's actually external. So we're going to go ahead and put that into the sharing request, invite the person so that they can edit it, you could just choose to view, but in this case, we want, obviously, them to be able to edit. So we'll go ahead and send that. And so then, while that's being sent, I'll show you sort of the admin, the two admin places that you can control it. So for the SMB experience, from the admin portal, essentially you go to service settings and go to sites and document sharing. And from here, it's a single toggle that enables all sharing and access to documents. So it's either on or off. And you can also manage individual users. So if you wanted to remove someone that you had shared with, you can do that from here as well. So you can take back those permissions once they've been given. And then from the admin experience inside M or P, we have a few more options inside the SharePoint site. You can manage it at both the site collection level, so you could have separate profiles for individual site collections, or you can manage it for the entire tenant. So you can turn it off for everyone. So for in this example, if we go to just this single site collection and go to sharing, we'll get the options for being able to either disable it. So this is allowing both external and anonymous. You can also say that they can allow external, but only if they create accounts and are authenticated. So again, and it notifies you whether you're changing it for just a few people or everyone. And if you go to settings, this is where you can do the global. So here is the external sharing at a global level with the same options. So a couple ways that you can change that. So let's go back to Katie, who just got the document. So Sarah has shared this document. We're going to go ahead and open that inside the web app. So let's see, go ahead and get access to the document. So here we don't have access to the individual SharePoint site that we want to have. So let's see that we have, please share the site so that they can actually get access to the site that they need to be able to access it. We're not going to go ahead and change that site in particular, but we'll just go back to our SkyDrive here. And you can see, again, if we look at who we've shared it, we have what the different advanced options are. And we're able to also get into the more advanced granular SharePoint permissions as well. You can also see who you've requested to give access to. So here you can see if there's a pending request and if it has to get approved by someone, you can do that as well and set up an approval process inside your organization. So if you have, again, external ones that are pending, and you can see if there's any past ones that have been added as well. So in this example here, we're going to go to the access requests. And we can, for example, we can approve, decline, or check. So we're going to go ahead and we'll decline, and then that user will go into the history. And then the last thing I wanted to show was sort of what the mobile experience looks like. So if we go ahead and we can switch, if I take a look at some of Katie Jordan's documents, so I'll go to her SkyDrive here. We can see some of the different documents. We have this Prosware budget. We can see here what that looks like again in the web app. But we can also now, with the new mobile app, take a look at that on other devices. Let's see, let's switch. So here you can see we have iOS device. We can go into the new Office Mobile. We also have Link. So the Link can be connected. Here we were chatting with Sarah. You can manage all of your links and see also your online meetings. Like here was the online meeting that we joined earlier. You can see that show up all inside your calendar from this event. But we're going to go back to Office Mobile. And here you can see that we have the Prosware project budget that we saw in the web app previously. So we're going to go ahead and download that from from the server. So it's going to go and connect to the SkyDrive Pro account and pull that down onto the phone, although the internet doesn't seem like it's connected. So I'm going to just see if I can get it to restart and reconnect. There we are. So we can see, again, we've got that pulled up in a mobile experience. So again, it's optimized it, but it's kept our images. We can go ahead and save or share that. We can, if it was a large document, want to find certain words, we can go ahead and search. But in this case, we just want to do some quick notes and edits, annotations. So we can select a different area. We can add a comment to it, or we can format that. So if we wanted to, say, highlight certain parts of it or cross them out, we can do those aspects as well. Go ahead and close that. And as we go back, it says, do you want to save those changes? And then it'll confirm with us that we do, and save those back up to SkyDrive Pro. So it lets us know that it's uploading the changes. And then we'll be able to round trip those as well. So if we'll go back once inside, so we get back to our recent documents. From here as well, you can also go to other locations that you might have. So here you can see I've added three other locations, a SkyDrive at Contoso, which is the SkyDrive Pro account, but also some of the SharePoint sites that you saw working in earlier. You can create some new documents as well. When you go to add a place, you have options to add additional SkyDrives, additional SharePoint sites. You can have quite a list of locations that you're working on. And then you can also reset from the Settings tab. You also have the ability to reset the entire app if you want to change what users and which accounts you have connected with it. So we'll go back to our document here and just go ahead and refresh that so we can see some of the changes that have been uploaded from different users. You can see, again, the equipment that we had highlighted and crossed out. If we had done comments, et cetera, those also round trip with the document. So that gives us kind of a nice complete picture of the mobile. You saw sort of the mobile experience that in the browser and some of the apps as well. Another one of the apps that a lot of people aren't aware about that we have for the mobile experience is the SharePoint News Feed. So this one allows you to get basically, if you follow documents inside of SharePoint, you can now see, you can follow people, sites, or documents, and you can get all of those updates right on your mobile phone, see if there's important ones to you. So again, brings the same experience across that you would have in the browser, on your PC, and also on your mobile device. So if we go back to the slides, want to quickly walk you through a little bit more about some of the external sharing. So with the external sharing, basically, you want to make sure, again, that you know whether you're allowing external links or not. The guest links, if those are used, they basically, you can allow editing with them, but it won't have the same level of tracking changes that you would have if you enable it through require sign-in. Essentially, then it treats it as another user object, and it has all of those changes that are made by each individual external contact. And then also, external access means that they can download and access it with the rich client, where anonymous can only be done through the web app. So I showed some of the external controls and the level of granularity, but it also gives you some of the details around if you have, say, a public-facing team site, what the level of granularity you'll have there. So you have the ability to share with PAL, so partner client access license, and customers can have many of those per month. I believe it's 10,000, and they can rotate out. So there's really, for SMB, there's very unlikely to use up all of the ability to give people access for quick external edits with companies they need to collaborate with. So I mentioned this at the beginning, but Office 365 Pro Plus, also known as Small Business Premium, that is the rich client that's included inside the small business offering that includes the full desktop apps that sync down to the machine locally. But again, because it's the click-to-run technology, it can run side-by-side with the previous version of Office. It'll always stay up to date. We'll get those again from the main server. It gives you the ability to have the roaming. So we kind of already showed on the mobile and what it looked like on the web. So your one of the nice things about that is that your most recent documents travel with you to different devices. Because it just streams down, it's very easy to install. So again, this whole idea of making it easier for SMBs to not have to have a large IT overhead or just get up and running quickly, again, it helps do that. And then last thing is the Office on Demand. So going back to our SharePoint site here, we're going to go back to our homepage, go back to our SkyDrive Pro. From the SkyDrive Pro experience, there's a tab here on the left called Use Office on Demand. The scenario for Office on Demand is really if you have, say, a shared computer that isn't your primary machine. So on your primary machine, you've probably installed Office and you've connected it to your account, et cetera. But let's say you're away for some reason, don't have access to your primary machine, and you want to have Office access, basically. You want to be able to you need some functionality that isn't in the web apps, and you need the rich client. Office on Demand lets you stream down just the individual application into the temporary internet file storage so that you can use it for that one time. And then when you log off, all of the information for Office and all of the data that you were editing the file with is again deleted from that machine. So here is the Office on Demand page. You can stream down Excel, PowerPoint, Word, Publisher, and Access. And we'll see. I don't think we'll stream the whole thing down since our internet's been kind of fun. But we'll just go ahead and kick that off so you can kind of see the experience. So here you get the little Office pop up, and it lets you know that things, you know, how fast it's going. Even on this connection, it'll be pretty good because it can stream down just the bits it needs in the exact order to get it running with the most frequently used features. So that gives, again, a lot of flexibility for customers to use Office anywhere. The requirement for Office on Demand is it has to be a Windows 7 or newer PC. Any questions about Office on Demand? We'll see. It has to get a little further before I'm able to actually cancel out of it.
So it's only Windows 7 11?
Yes. So it uses the virtualization technology that was part of Windows 7. It's very similar. If you've ever seen AppV or heard of AppV, it's based on the same technology under the hood. So here we have Word that we've just streamed down. Again, it sees that it brings in the information. Who the user is again, so we're going to go ahead and close out of that, but that's actually separate from the other one. There we go. So that one's closed, and it was actually again it was side by side with the other version of Office because it was loading into the temporary internet cache, so it wasn't conflicting with any previous installs that you might have of Office on the computer. And then the other aspect that was on the slide. That I wanted to just again highlight was the fact because you have the recent documents that's actually being synced to Office 365. Notice that we get the same recent documents across the different devices. So the same recent documents that you get in the Word desktop over here are the same ones that you get on the mobile device. So as you use documents, where you were, where you left off, roams with you. If you have multiple PCs, it'll remember where you are and which documents you last used and start you there as well. So it's another advantage that we're able to deliver with Office 365 Pro Plus and having that cloud connectivity. So Office really knows who you are and is able to take that into account when you're working with it. Yes, question. No, there's no way to get signatures for Outlook to roam. All right, so then for kind of admin overview, I've shown most aspects. I'll just quickly hit on a couple others. So if we go to for the small business, so again, sites and document sharing, IM meetings, conferencing, this is where you can just turn on some of those aspects. Mobile access is really around being able to, the mobile access is really if you want to allow people to set up Exchange Active Sync. And also Link Mobile. So I showed the Link app quickly when I showed you the iPhone. So this is where you could disable the ability to have Exchange Active Sync or use Link Mobile. Passwords. This also is one of those features that was at first PowerShell only. We learned very quickly it's not. You can't have SMBs trying to change their passwords. How long it takes before they reset using PowerShell. So here's where you can change the number of days. Very, very useful for SMB customers. And then lastly is if you want to allow them to have community access or not. So that's sort of the overview from the service settings aspect. Users and groups, I went in here and showed you shared mailboxes. The other one is this is contacts, so you can have a common external contact list. So that's another useful one. From licenses, since many of you are partners, this is where you can go and make sure that a customer adds you as the official partner of record. So from the licenses page where they can see you know, the quantity that they have and the cost, if they click on that subscription, they're then able to add partner information, and this is where they can add your Microsoft partner ID, and you'll be associated as the partner of record for all of the benefits that that accrues, and of course you'll then be able to do things like manage on behalf of or administer on behalf of, as it's also known, which is essentially which enables you to use your partner ID and log in and make changes to the admin settings and manage the service on behalf of your customer.
Question.
Yes?
Can a customer change their partner? If you adopt the relation to the partner,
can I stop it? So that, from that licenses, if you add a partner, you can also then go and remove a partner from that same area. But I don't have one added here, but you go in and you remove them from the same place. You can manage your domains. So this is where you can add additional ones. We recently did some enhancements for GoDaddy in particular. If your customers use GoDaddy, we've actually got integration with them so that basically the customer just has to log into their GoDaddy account. We then can associate it, and we can do all of the DNS record updating automatically. The customer does not have to log in and do any manual records. It'll just use the API and programmatically add those. And it basically took a very long process and has reduced it to just a few minutes. So it's very easy now to add domains, which was sometimes very challenging for our customers who weren't familiar with how to use domain registrars. Yes? It's only for a small business, and it is only for GoDaddy at this point in time. We just shipped that like 2 weeks ago, so it's a very very new capability. And then other thing, service status. This is the service health dashboard. So this is where customers can go and see how the service is doing, and they have a key to let them know if there's anything going on with the service, and that you can always drill down into what is the past record, and we also have the ability to see a history for the past 30 days. If there are any post-incident reports, that's where you can download those, and customers can subscribe to the RSS feed as well so that they get updates if there's any changes, and the partner can subscribe to this as well. And then lastly, there's the support aspect of it, so they can go ahead and get support. There's the new support. There's the new support overview. This actually will change based on this little tab here. The popular answers will actually change based on where you are in the administration portal. So it's actually very smart knowing where you are, probably what task you're trying to do, and tries to provide just-in-time information based on what the customer actually wants to accomplish. And then, again, we have the basic, some of the setup areas. Another important thing is just making sure everyone's able to get their Office 365 Pro Plus. So we have the software tab that customers get, and they can always go to their Office 365 settings and go to software as well to get Office. But sometimes that has been tricky for people to find, so it's always good to remind people to go to Office 365 settings and software to be able to install Office on their other machines. All right, so with that, I'll just quickly summarize and then take any other questions that you have. So I think you saw how we have a pretty wide breadth of capabilities that we're able to provide for specific scenarios, such as, you know, different scheduling issues that you have with a small business, for some of the different, you know, always up-to-date aspects, being able to both sync across all of your different devices and have experiences optimized for those. And again, the fact that it's relatively inexpensive compared to setting up a server, buying the server in the first place, then setting it up. People are able to get up and running with email and collaboration services much, much quicker than they ever could before. So with that, I will, I think I have to just go through some, yeah, track resources. Again, this is all in the slide. Definitely check some of these things out. Oh, there was one other thing. I had a question before the presentation around resources for helping users, helping train users. One site that I recommend if you're looking for an aggregate, obviously office.com has all of the resources that are, you know, specific and can be searched and, you know, get to the very specific thing that someone's trying to do. But if you're looking for sort of an aggregate of all of the resources for Office 365 training, if you go to the TechNet and you go to the Office 2013 resource kit and go to user readiness, there's a nice summary of all of with links to all of the main training videos that are available. Now there's more than what's listed here, but this is just a lot of the getting started ones. And so you have all of the different individual applications. It gives you a link to the quick start guide, to what's new, and then to the training videos. So, and at the top, you know, so we have some of the 365 ones. So things like, you know, setting up your phone, setting up Office, how to install it, etc. All of those are available here. So just always good to have training resources, particularly for small business customers as they're trying to get up and running on the service. And then there's those resources, and please fill out your evaluations, and I'll take some additional questions. If there are any. Oh, okay. He has hand first, then you. So the question was, how do you get Office Mobile for iPhone? Yeah. So Office Mobile for iPhone is available from the App Store. And once you install it, you have to activate it against a version, activate it against a Office 365 subscription. So you need to have an Office 365 subscription in order to use it. As long as you have an Office 365 subscription that includes Office 365 Pro Plus, or any of the desktop apps. So that's Office 365 Home Premium, Office 365 University, Office 365 Small Business Premium, Office 365 Midsize Business SKU, Office 365 Enterprise E3, Office 365 Enterprise E4, and then the equivalent education and government SKUs. So those are the ones that are eligible. I've gotten that question before. If you could tell, I could rattle those off now. All right, yes.
My question is, is it possible to extend the storage for Unity?
Is it possible to extend
the storage?
So with the small business, it is not possible. With the small business and mid-size SKUs, it is not possible to extend. If you have the enterprise, it is possible to, if you have the enterprise SKU, you can either purchase the Exchange Online archiving add-on, or you can purchase Office 365 Enterprise E3, which includes unlimited archives for your users. Yeah. So you have to start with Enterprise, essentially. If you need more than 25 gigs, Enterprise. Yes.
Mm-hmm. They have the same thing in OneNote. You open OneNote the very first time, mm-hmm. You know, this SkyDrive, which they think is a SkyDrive Pro,
very large enterprise, you put a good policy to get rid of SkyDrive everywhere, to get rid of Live everywhere. But the small business, it's a nightmare now, man. Are you guys actually simplifying things anytime soon?
So the question was really, what is the identity strategy for Office 365 versus Microsoft accounts? So the basic answer is they are going to remain separate. They are separate identity platforms, and they will maintain that separation. I think you know, we're always looking at who we're targeting the products are and change, and we do adapt them over time. So if your question is, would we ever consider it for the small business customers? I think, yes, we would consider it. There's no timeline as to when we would do it. But we will still always have, there will always be that separation for the enterprise customers.
Which
right. So I know what you're saying. It's just, I don't think there's a roadmap for
it. It can be,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is complicated that we have two separate identity platforms. I agree. Yes. All right. Have a fun Ask the Experts, everyone. Thanks for coming.